You are listening to the United States of Football Show, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily. Well, it's over. No, not our podcast.
We're breaking up?
We're still here. We're coming on strong. No, MLS Cup has finished. It happened yesterday, and we're here to talk about it. This is the United States of Football Show. Robert Hay is on the other end of the line. I am Earl Reed, and we are very happy that you downloaded this podcast, and we hope we can talk about the events of yesterday as well as over the past week or two, because there's been some real interesting events. So, Robert, how are things going for you?
Well, you know, they're doing pretty well, just like you, Earl. We're enjoying a winter wonderland here in the D.C. area. Those of you who caught the Redskins Chiefs slaughter got to see the weather that we're experiencing, which is, I guess, going on throughout most of the East Coast, northern part of the East Coast. A little bit of snow, a little bit of sleet and rain. So we're enjoying that, but I have my cherry chocolate Bock from a certain brewing company right here next to me. Get me ready for this podcast tonight.
The brewery's right next to you?
No, unfortunately, the beer is right next to me. The brewery is much farther away. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. As far as the winter wonderland goes, we've been, I guess some people look at it as blessed, but I feel like we've been cursed the last few years. It just seems like our winters have been rather mundane. And, it's nice to have, even before Christmas here, a pretty decent dumping of snow. I mean, it's only like a couple inches where I'm at, but still it's significant accumulation, which typically by this time, if we've had any snow, it just has melted off because the ground never had a chance to freeze. So
it's enough for snowballs. That's the important thing.
I like seasons, so the winter season works for me.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, MLS Cup.
Do you know who else likes winter? The MLS Cup.
I don't. Well, they really didn't have any choice.
Once. No, they did not.
A couple of years ago, they decided to go to the top point getter in the regular season that is an MLS Cup hosting. And so that kind of, that was sort of a foreboding as far as what could happen down the line.
It's a gamble. Anytime that you sit there and say, we're going to expose ourselves to chance in terms of holding the location of a championship game, you're gambling. And, this is one of those times. The past 2 years they've lucked out and had it in L.A., and this time it didn't quite work out because they had it in snowy Kansas City.
But to me, that's okay, because I think one of the things that Don Garber has gotten right in recent years is looking towards these soccer-specific stadiums and using them in order to promote the game in the big setting. And so instead of trying to put on an MLS Cup at, Jerry Land or whatever you call it down in Dallas, 100,000-seat stadium and only putting 20,000 in, let's have it in Kansas City at Sporting Park and, have it be, it's a little snowy. You could have it in Southern California. You could have it in Florida.
You couldn't. Not the way MLS treated Florida. But, you're right.
Right. But, you could pick a warm weather state, or a dome and try to do it. But it's just not going to have the same atmosphere as what it has if you're going to put it in a city that has a team. And, and one of the rooting interests. So, I think that's a decision that Garber has gotten right. I don't know how you feel about it, but.
I think I agree with you. I liked being able to see the fans interact. And, if this match would have been held in, a new stadium that wasn't one of these two team stadiums, then you wouldn't have had the same. You would have had supporters there and things like that, but you wouldn't have had the atmosphere. You wouldn't have had a full stadium. I think we're also a little bit spoiled the fact that it was held in Kansas City. There's a couple of cities that I can think of that wouldn't have sold out the place, to be honest with you, if it was an MLS Cup final. So they did luck out in that regard, regardless of the weather. Think they got that part right. And you saw the RSL fans right next to the Sporting Kansas City fans. And, it was a really good atmosphere. I was noticing late in the second half, it was just deafening, it seemed like, coming across the TV. So I think that made for a really, really good championship atmosphere. I thought they, even though, you know, the field was rough and players were falling all over the place, I think overall it was a win for the league.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a strange thing to think. What if New York had, you know, been in MLS Cup after winning the Supporters' Shield? You know, what would they have been able to do at Red Bull Arena? You know, would they have been able to fill it up?
Well, we know that they don't do well with snow in Red Bull Arena, just thinking back to last year. Yeah, you know, I think New York would have been okay just because they love winners or perceived winners. But, you know, there's certainly some I won't name because I don't want to pick on some of the fans. But, you know, there are certainly – I can think of at least three stadiums that wouldn't sell out. And I'd be willing to bet money that they would not sell out if they hosted an MLS Cup final and their team was there.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, let's get down to the action, I guess, because that's sort of hypothetical and, you know, we could debate that for a while. Regulation – you had a 1-1 tie between the two teams. Has been seen before that we, you know, get through regulation without a winner decided. Real Salt Lake got their goal in the 52nd minute to open the scoring with Alvaro Saborillo. And Kansas City answered just about a half an hour later, you know, about 15 minutes from the end of the match. Well, the end of regulation, let's say. Aurelian Collin headed home a Graham Susie corner to equalize, sending Blue Hell or whatever it's called.
The Blue Cauldron?
Yeah, whatever you want to call it, you know, into a state of frenzy. And, you know, you ended up going all the way until, you know, penalties. You had extra time or added extra time, ending up without another goal. So you had probably one of the more intriguing penalty shootouts that I've seen in a while. There was one over in one of the lower leagues. It was actually a promotion playoff, and that one actually went to the goalkeepers. And this one looked like it was going to, but anyway, I don't know. What do you want to start with? I mean, I guess we probably should start by saying Sporting Kansas City wins. You know, I don't think we ever completely said that. Congratulations to them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, quite an intriguing match. And I think it's too bad that one team had to lose. But, you know, the home team got the spoils and their fans were the ones that went home celebrating. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, you know, I'll start. I think just with general thoughts on this match, it was a very well-played game. I thought both teams came out with very good strategies. The elements kind of played a role in dictating how this game was going to be played. You know, RSL seemed like they had a pretty good strategy, but the field and the way the ball was playing and the way they were being pressed by Sporting Kansas City forced them to make some adjustments. For Sporting Kansas City, I think having Rozell go down in the eighth minute was a critical part to them because I think that made them have to play a little bit more defensive, had to shift their midfield a little bit so they weren't as aggressive attacking as I think they would have been throughout this match. So I think there were some adjustments made throughout for both teams. I honestly thought in regulation that RSL should have been a little bit upset not to have won. I think they had the better misfortune in front of goal. I could think of, you know, a couple of times where the ball just hit off the woodwork or bounced out from the post after it had beaten Kevin Hartman and the rest of Sporting KC. I'm not Kevin Hartman. Good Lord. The hair is getting to me. You know, it's
Jimmy Nielsen.
Yeah, him too. Yeah, anyway, there's a joke there about that. But anyway, had beaten them a couple of times. And so I think that RSL, even though they probably were outplayed a little bit, I think we're probably should have been a little bit down on the fact that they hadn't won a regulation. And then, you know, I think it's even though these matches are won in the extra time, more often than not, you see them just kind of be more cautious affairs. So it wasn't terribly surprising it went to penalties. Entertaining match, I think. I think anytime you're looking at an MLS Cup final, you always should bet the under on the total score if you're in Vegas, because it's never going to be a high scoring game. But you know, overall, I think this was a pretty good match for the league to highlight.
Yeah, well, and I also think that, you know, the prevailing wisdom that I would have had is that because, you know, Real Salt Lake has won this relatively recently, you know, a number of the players on their team have experienced an MLS Cup victory, that they may have had the, you know, a slight advantage there. Now, some would also argue that Kansas City defeating Seattle a couple of years ago for the Open Cup would also provide them some, you know, experience when it comes to managing one of these down the stretch kind of situations and, you know, playing for all the marbles, so to speak. So, you know, I guess each team had their share of, you know, experience. I think the one thing that Kansas City, I don't want to say has going for them, because to me it's more like talking points, but, you know, I really felt like Major League Soccer, you know, they've got a lot riding here on Kansas City, in my opinion. You know, you have, you know, Graham Soucy is, I think, a guy that they, you know, and Beisler, you know, especially are guys that I think not only MLS but U.S. Soccer is putting a lot of, what do you want to call it?
Putting a lot of attention and time and effort in.
Stock.
Yeah, stock. Yeah. There you go.
Stock in. You know, I think, you know, you saw Kansas City re-sign these guys in the last 12 months. And really, it almost, you know, I don't know who it was created for, if it was created for them or whether it was created for the Galaxy, but this retention fund that was created in order to sign, it's not homegrown, but it's definitely, I believe they want it used on players that are domestic and, you know, in order to keep them here. And so, you know, you have Soucy and Beisler that are prime, you know, fixtures in not only, you know, in the U.S. men's national team. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a marketing sequence that you have going on here where I think, and it was interesting to see Soucy come down in that fifth penalty kick with a chance to win it, and he skied it. And to me, that's just like, you know, that would have been the icing on the cake, I think, for all of the, you know, the marketers and the, you know, the PR people for MLS would have been him sinking that to, you know, send Kansas City through, and instead he missed it. And so that sort of went on this long, drawn-out penalty shootout where, you know, you felt like not a lot of them were well taken. But,
no.
Yeah, and it turned out, let me see, I have to get out the rundown here because there was a chance for Sebastian Velazquez because Real Salt Lake was the second team. You know, Sporting Kansas City led off the shootout, so Salt Lake took him second. Well, Lawrence Olam shot wide, actually looked like he scuffed his shot, so it gave Sebastian Velazquez a chance to win it for RSL, and he really just hit a poor penalty, and that was just one of those where you kind of felt like, oh, gee, this might end up going to the goalkeepers, and eventually it ended up that Lavelle Palmer, you know, he struck it well. It just hit the underside of the crossbar and came out. It could have easily snuck under and, you know, sent it to that.
Worth noting also that for RSL, both Luis Gil and Robbie Finley had been taken out of this match. So I don't know, you know, off the top of my head, I don't know their penalty taking stats or anything like that. But I think that definitely plays a role. I'd rather have Robbie Finley taking one of these kicks than Sebastian Velazquez myself or some of the other guys that were taking it. So, you know, they may have been gassed, and Robbie Finley didn't contribute much in the second half, but still, he was taken off in the 112th minute. So you have to be thinking that penalties are coming up here, and Jason Christ gave
right
up a little bit on that one.
Right. I mean, and you look at their lineup in the first five, and, you know, you have like Ned Grabovoy. You know, I don't necessarily consider him a guy that I would want stepping up to take penalties for me. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, he's not my first choice. You know, I think I would rather have, you know, one of those other two gentlemen, you know, Luis Gil especially, I think, taking penalties. I don't know how Robbie Finley is, but, you know.
But he's paid to score goals, so I would think that should be. He would definitely be in the top five, or the first five, I would think.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure people will second guess the lineup choices and some of the substitutions. You know, in the case of Kansas City, you know, Vermees didn't have much choice when, you know, Rizal came out. You have to bring in Lawrence Olam, who's, you know, a much more defensive-minded player, in my opinion, and is not going to be, you know, a guy who, you know, I've associated Oriel Rizal with, you know, being more of a fulcrum player, more of a guy who's going to distribute. Olam is more of just a, you know, destroyer type, a defender converted to midfield, and so all he's looking to do is just break up the flow. So, but anyway, I mean, this was, you know, I think MLS got their money's worth for this. You know, they got a pretty good scene with the crowd. I thought the crowd was great, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Not just pretty good, it was great.
Mm-hmm.
Weather-wise, yeah, I mean, that's going to be an issue when you get snow. I don't know how you avoid that other than changing your schedule.
Oh,
and I'm not sure that's a good idea either.
Well, so. The Don addressed that at halftime of the game. They questioned him about this. One of the questions they asked about was the fall to spring schedule, and they said, you know, is this ever going to be a possibility? And we're going to get more into these topics a little bit later, the State of the Union – or State of the Union – State of the League and the halftime interviews. But he did say, you know, we seriously considered it more so than we ever had before, and we realized that taking a 10-month break would not work for this league. But it's more a matter of when than if. So I don't quite know how that works out. But I guess one day they will be able to avoid the snow on the championships. But I think your point stands. I mean, really – it wasn't a terrible, terrible thing. This league's dealt with snow before in playoff games, and you know they're learning from it. And I didn't think the weather was too big of a factor here. One thing I did want to throw in here, mm-hmm. even though I've mistaken his name already, Jimmy Nielsen, I thought looked very, very poor in regulation in the 90 minutes and then the extra time, but obviously played very, very well in the penalties, to the point where during this game, I was sitting there wondering if he'd lost it, and you know, it was like, should Kansas City start thinking about maybe, you know, getting somebody ready for next year for to challenge him? Or I mean, he just looked poor, and I know now they've come out and said, well, he had broken ribs, and I never really believe those stories when they come out after a player's played poorly or struggled. But you know, I think he redeemed himself and did very well in the penalties, which was surprising considering, like I said, how poorly I think he played during this match.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, that was the consensus from what I've read, from the things that I saw on Twitter. I was at a wedding on Saturday, so I did not get to see this as it was going on. I caught it afterwards, so you know, I kind of went back after I watched the match and was looking through some of the Twitter rumble, and that seemed to be one of the things that was. It's coming through is that, you know, maybe Nielsen is starting to get to that point. And I think in the commentary of the match itself, they were theorizing whether or not he is, you know, looking to retire. Maybe it's time. I don't know.
Kevin Hartman did, so maybe you should just follow Kevin Hartman.
Yeah, I mean, that would knock out two birds with one stone there for you, I guess.
Thank God. It's getting so hard to keep all these keepers straight.
Yeah, well, if he sticks around for three more years and you're still saying Kevin Hartman, then I'm probably going to have to drive down to D.C. and, you know, take a swing at you or something. Or maybe Nielsen will.
Yeah, exactly. I'm afraid of him. He looks like he's a rough guy. Although, no, according to his book, he's a lovable guy. So,
I mean, I follow him on Twitter. He seems to be pretty cool. So, I don't know. Just, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean he's still in his prime goalkeeping years, so take that for what it's worth. But, you know, he got the job done. He saved a couple of balls there in, you know, in the penalty shootout. You know, it's always tough with a penalty shootout because you never, you know, you can look at the score sheet. That doesn't really tell the whole story. You know, if a guy shoots about, you know, waist high and only, you know, 6 inches to a foot off the center line, you know, saving that, as long as you know, don't anticipate too much and go that way, you're going to get it. You know, it's the ones where it hits the side netting that, you know, if you place those with power, you know, if you could get a save off of one of those, more power to you. I mean, that, mm-hmm. that deserves commendation, but, yeah, so.
So, I mean, well, I was going to say, can we bring up some tactics because there's some breaking. Maybe not breaking news, but there's some news floating around on Twitter right now that's related to this. Do you want to talk some tactics about the lineup selection and things like that?
Well, I haven't seen too much of the talk.
Oh, good. So I'll break some stuff for you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess for me, the one, you know, on RSL's side, you know, it kind of stands out that you've got, you know, Ned Grabovoy in the lineup. He's sort of I don't know.
I guess that's a veteran presence kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, a mucker, I guess that's what I would call him. Sort of a, you know, a nails, you know, tough as nails, mm-hmm. sort of a, yeah, maybe a physical presence, but just more knows how to get the job done.
He's the softer version of Kyle Beckerman.
Maybe, but you know, maybe, you know, with less dreads and more, you know, sort of greasy, slick back hair that I don't know. I don't know how to put it, but you know, I wouldn't necessarily call him or consider him to be, you know, a classy player. You know, if you want to take Saborillo or Finley, and I mean, it's tough to really compare either of those to the Galaxy. You know, Grabovoi's sort of your, maybe your Mike McGee out of that. I don't know. I mean, that's actually too kind to Grabovoi probably, because mm-hmm. Mike McGee is the MVP. But, you know, a guy who ends up being an unsung hero, let's say McGee, what he was a couple of years ago, before it's all of a sudden gotten cool to, you know, love Mike McGee for all he's done for not only the Galaxy, but now the Fire. But, you know, Grabovoi is a guy that I don't think takes too many headlines. I mean, kind of reminds me of a smaller, you know, like Alan Gordon kind of guy. You know, just he's going to go out and scrap it up and, you know, get you know, do all that running and get his, you know, get his shirt dirty trying to, you know, win the game. So, I mean, but other than that, you know, you see Claudio Bieler not being in the lineup for KC. I've sort of harped on that on Twitter over the course of the playoffs. You know, Vermees isn't going to get criticized for it because they won. So, but you know, you got a DP and he's sitting the bench. I mean, it's pretty rough. But
well, the interesting thing is, and this is okay, this is why I was bringing this up. Dom Dwyer, according to our friends overseas at the Telegraph, have said he is going to make a move to an undisclosed championship club, Sky Bet Championship Club, which is your second division of English soccer. With the possibility on a loan with the possibility of a permanent transfer. So, that we may have seen his last MLS game for a while, but you know, it was an interesting, you bring up an interesting point, the fact that he was starting over Bieler, who's making all this money. I'm not quite sure if that's gutsy. I guess because it's worked out for Vermees for the most part, it's a gutsy move, that he should be applauded for, but, you know, when we talk about the future of this team, it's good. This brings up some questions, you know. Where does he, you know, Bieler fit on this team? Is he another kind of high-priced DP who just, you know, isn't going to work in this league? Or, you know, I guess we'll get into that later. But this definitely brings up some questions.
Yeah, I mean, and one thing that comes to mind is, you know, were they putting Dwyer in the shop window in order to, you know, try to, you know, demand even more compensation out of that, whether he goes on loan or full term? You know, maybe. I don't know, but yeah, it is true. You know, if you lose both Dwyer and Bieler in the off season, let's just say Kansas City decide to cut all ties with Bieler, they might be able to do that. I don't know how long the contract is they have with him, but let's just say they were able to do that. So then what do? You're relying on CJ Sapong, you know, Teal Bunbury. You know, where are you going from there? You've really taken a step down. Bieler was pretty good, you know, throughout the season. It's tough to tell. If I make any kind of, you know, it's basically just an assumption if I say anything as to why Bieler wasn't starting. You know, my assumption would be he's not a guy who puts in a lot of work at practice. I mean, Vermees to me would seem like a guy who wants guys who give everything all the time. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, it kind of makes it strange that Benny Failhaber is able to get into that team if that's the case, because, you know, there's been some, you know, maybe he's messed up enough times that he's figured it out now. I don't know, but
yeah.
Well, I think that's one of, maybe it's because, you know, I follow the Philadelphia Union, and John Hackworth tends to be that kind of guy too. You know, he wants players who are going to put in the effort, you know, at practice, or, you know, and so if you aren't doing that, you're, you know, going to struggle to find a lineup. So I don't know, but
Yeah, I think the point is, though, is that this team, it looks like in the offseason where we're talking about Sporting Kansas City, is going to have to go through some thinking about what where they're going to go from here. I mean, you know, they're going to have to look at their forwards and see if they can come up with some guys who are going to score some goals. I mean, it looks like they have some possibilities here, but you know, if Bieler goes and Dwyer is gone, according to this rumor, you know, your depth at that position gets hit pretty well. If Jimmy Nielsen does walk away, then you've got, you know, that to take care of. And at some point, you know, Matt Beisler isn't a young guy, but, you know, is he going to get taken a look at from, you know, maybe a more high profile club or something like that? And Graham Zuzzi's not young as well, but, you know, maybe he'll get one last chance to make a move overseas. You know, this is a team that looks like it could be, if things break wrong for him, really in flux in the off season, and it's kind of curious to see how they're going to hold everything together and try and repeat with this cup next year.
Right, and you know, I guess you could look at those two guys. Excuse me for a second, I had to cough. All right, there. I was able to mute before I coughed. It's, you know, these guys just got re-signed, but If you followed the Juan Agudelo saga in New England, he was supposed to go to Stoke, but his work permit got denied. With guys like Zusi and Beisler, you know for a fact their work, well, I would assume their work permits are going to be approved because they have played a majority of the minutes with the national team in the last 12 months. So that's one thing that they're kind of rubber stamped. If a team is looking for, you know, let's say cheap reserves and, you know, or, you know, an upgrade. Someone might look at Beisler as an upgrade. He's, 27. You know, it's kind of like the situation with Jeff Cameron a year or so ago from Houston where, you know, Stoke City was looking for, you know, help at the back. Let's go get Cameron. And, you know, you had AEG looking to sell off a player. So it's basically comes down to does MLS and the management, the ownership of Sporting Kansas City, do they want to cash in on these guys? That's my guess. And, you know, they've put money into it through this retention fund, but, you know, if a team came and said, we want Zusi for $5 million, are they going to turn that down? I don't know. I mean, they've done that for Landon Donovan, but are you convinced that Graham Zusi is the next Landon Donovan? That's probably a stretch for me. I don't know. It's, you know, and I had an article about this recently, you know, what this means for the United States. You know, what does it mean if these guys stay in MLS? Are they going to improve? You know, you have Clint Dempsey back here now. You know, what is it going to mean come Brazil? We could talk more about that a little later, but those are some questions I think that, you know, speak directly to Kansas City because, you know, Beisler and Zusi are main components of this team, and if they can't keep them, you know, if they feel like they have to sell them off because the price is right, you know, you could see it be a one and done for them. I mean, I don't know if their depth is really all that great. I look at some of the guys that come off the bench for them and, you know, Jacob Peterson, you know, I don't know. That's not what I consider to be, you know, big time talent. So maybe we should just talk about one other point before we head to a break.
Please.
What do you
think? Yeah, one other. Let's do it.
Let's do Real Salt Lake because obviously a tough loss for them, you know, tough loss, especially, for, you know, Lavelle Palmer with the miss, you know, that's always tough for a guy. You know, he's probably not been asked to make penalties and, you know, maybe only a couple times in his career and he misses the key one that puts him down. But, you know, it's like, you know, you have this rumor with Jason Christ floating around and it sounds like, you know, he's admitted in public that he's got some decisions to make. You know, New York City FC is, it sounds like they're pursuing him. You know, what's this going to mean for Real Salt Lake? You know, they lost a couple players this past offseason. We thought it was going to mean some, you know, negative trend for them. They were able to overcome it, but now could they also overcome losing their coach if that happens?
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, one of the nice things about RSL is they've always been kind of a team on the edge here. I mean, they're not a high spending team. They're not a team that, you know, their philosophy's been pretty consistent. And Jason Kreis has always been kind of a steady hand for them. You know, they've always been that team that's not flashy, but they've had success. You know, won an MLS Cup and so on and so forth. If he were to leave for this, he said, New York City FC job, you know, it does lead to some questioning about this franchise. And, you know, as we look at the league that is going through some changes, I mean, for a while there, we thought you had to have a DP in order to succeed in this league. We now know that's not necessarily true, but, you know,
you just have to have them sitting on the bench. Right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. You have to have them somewhere. Yeah, exactly. There you go. You have to have them in the vicinity, maybe buying franchises in Miami or something. I don't know. But, you know, you do have kind of the core of this team, as you had mentioned, Earl, that had been there before in 2009.
I believe that's the case.
Yeah, I think so. Getting older, obviously aging out. Kyle Beckerman is, God, my age, which is scary to think about. But, you know, you've got some guys that are getting older here, and they're going to have to go through. And there's some good young players on RSL, but, you know, if Jason Kreis leaves, who are you going to bring in? What's the philosophy going to be? If Kreis stays, what changes do you make to this team? Obviously, they don't have a ton of cash to throw around and make huge changes. And I, you know, even though they almost were a, you know, penalty kick away from winning MLS Cup, I'm not sure that this team as it is sustainable. I think they need to make some tweaks here and there. I think their fullbacks need to get a look at. Nick Raimondo's great, but again, you know, even though keepers tend to stay on longer than others, he's not going to be around forever. Robbie Finley's been serviceable for him, and Sabrio has been very good, but, you know, Sabrio has injury issues. Finley, you know, is inconsistent at times. You know, I just think that this is a team where you might want to take a hard look and say, okay, we're doing very well every year, but could we do a little bit better? Is this a team that could be, you know, at this level every year? I don't know, but I think they're going to have to go through some questioning if Kreis leaves and sit there and say, okay, what do we want to be and who do we bring in to get to that goal? Which sounds all very amorphous and kind of wishy-washy, but I think that a lot of times your head coach dictates your strategy, either overtly because he'll gab in the media or, you know, behind the scenes because he's a partner in how you build your team. So if he were to leave, you'd obviously see kind of a rethinking maybe of what this team is going to look like. So and that, I think that'll be interesting for RSL. You know, the Western Conference is going through a lot of changes. You know, LA is holding on to their stars, but, you know, Seattle has the new star power. Portland is up and coming. And you know, there's a lot of challenges in this. In that conference. So what does RSL do? Are they able to hold on for how long with this current? Think about it this way. They were 3 points away from winning the Supporters' Shield, roughly. New York won with 59. They finished with 56. They were in the finals of both the U.S. Open Cup and MLS Cup. Think of how close they were to winning all three trophies this year.
So your three winners we have this year are New York Red Bulls getting their first trophy in their existence, if you don't count the Emirates Cup.
they do. They do.
Yeah, I have to rub some into that. But, yeah, so they get the Supporters Shield. DC United has the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. And Sporting Kansas City is your MLS Cup winner. You know, whoever you root for may decide which one you value more. So
the U.S. Open Cup is pretty awesome.
I guess I set that one up for you.
There you go. Thank you.
When we get back on the United States of Football show, we have some other things to talk about. There's been some speeches by Don Garber in the last couple of days that I think we have some talking points from. We also have the important World Cup draw, which happened at the end of last week. We'll talk about all of that when we return to the United States of Football show, sponsored by Simply Football and World Football Daily. And you are listening to the B-Side Shuffle as we head to the break. We return for the second segment on the United States of Football show. Earl Reed with Robert Hay here. And we just wanted to say that you can find us on iTunes. If you already found us on there and that's why you're subscribed to us, we thank you. Leave us feedback. We would appreciate that. Rate us, because that will help us in the long term of getting on different charts, and hopefully people will listen to the show. Yeah. And you can find us on Twitter. If you look in the comments section, or the verbiage section of this or whatever, you should be able to find our addresses. We won't go through it because we have more to talk about. So unless you have something else, let's actually, when we were in the break, we were just talking about something we wanted to bring up. And Robert, I guess what you were saying is you kind of felt like, because of the World Cup draw on Friday and maybe even the long layoff, the buzz for this MLS Cup wasn't quite as strong as it maybe is what you'd think it should be or was in the past.
Yeah, and I was wondering if this was just me, and you know, people, you know, provide feedback on the website and through Twitter if you agree or disagree. But you know, I was distracted this week; I had some stuff going on. But every time I looked at the media, soccer media and things like that, the conversation was around the U.S. national team. You know, the World Cup, which is related to that, of course. But also more the Premier League and some of the other leagues. You know, the Champions League was also getting a lot of play here in the U.S. soccer media. And I almost felt like this game was just kind of an afterthought for a lot of people. I think part of that was the teams that were playing aren't the big sexy teams like L.A. or New York. I think part of it is there is so much international soccer news going on, and this doesn't compete with the World Cup. But I think also part of it was the layoff. I mean, the fact that you had 2 weeks in between, and this is not the Super Bowl where you have this huge lead up. You know, this game was consistently competing with other events going on. The fact that there was a layoff between the two legs of the conference finals. You know, it just seemed like this game just kind of happened, and it was like, oh, wait, yeah. MLS Cup is on Saturday afternoon, and we should watch it. So it's just kind of interesting. I don't know if others are going to agree or disagree with me, but I kind of felt like this game was just ignored until it happened and then finally got a little bit of the attention it probably deserved.
Yeah, and I kind of think that the two-week layoff is too much. You know, you see it in the NFL, but, you know, you have so much greater – you know, it's an international scene. It's the Super Bowl. You know, and so they can kind of get away with it because you pretty much that week leading up, that whole week is just, you know, talking point after talking point after talking point, and you know, the meeting with the media, and you know, just all sorts of things going on, and so they can afford to do it. I'm not sure MLS can, and you know, maybe that we can go now into the Garber State of the League, because I think that's a point that maybe he needs to bring up at some point, is how do you, you know, I mean, he's got some talking points from this, you know, State of the League address, and what, you know, I'm looking at, you know, TSN from Canada, this reporter Luke Weilman has kind of a rundown of the different talking points, you know, quality of play, passion of the fans, relevance of the teams, and value of our enterprise are all things that Garber thinks are key. I really think that MLS finding its place in this crowded American landscape and trying to assert itself better is a big deal. I mean, you had MLS Cup in Kansas City, and it really wasn't even the biggest, you know, thing on the plate in town there. I think they were having the SEC championship, Auburn and Missouri, in town there. So at the same time, so you really have this case where, yeah, MLS knows that they have to go up against the big dogs, but on the other hand, when you're going up against the big dogs, you know, maybe you have to find ways to skirt around that and find your own niche and create a market. And they've, you know, I just don't feel like MLS succeeds at this, and they don't get the buzz out there, and they've, you know, for whatever reason, can't win the battle in these terms, you know?
Yeah, they just can't, you know, they're stuck in the ways that everybody else does things. They, you know, they sit there and look at the NFL and Major League Baseball and the NBA and say, we need to do that. And there's really no outside the box thinking, I think, a lot of times with what they do and their media strategies. So probably, you know, it's just something they really should think about, you know, among other things, about how they market themselves and present themselves in this crowded sports landscape.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, it's always going to be tough. Like, I've seen it where, you know, when they played in L.A., I think they went up against the one year against, like, a Philadelphia-New York NFL game. And, you know, it's like, and that was when Philadelphia and New York were actually good. And so when you're doing that, that's really going to be, so you just have this where almost any time here in the fall / winter, it's going to be tough because you've got college football wrapping up, getting ready for the bowls. You've got the NFL, you know, knee deep in its season. You have the NBA, the NHL starting their seasons. And while those are long seasons and are not going to, you know, probably not going to draw huge ratings for anybody and, you know, steal much from MLS. You know, you're really just, and not only that, you have the Premier League. You have, you know, these other outfits that are coming in and, you know, engaging the American public on Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings. It's just really tough for MLS. They've got to figure this out in a real way here, because I would imagine on Monday we will find that the ratings were probably piss poor. And what's going to happen then? I don't know. I mean, you're talking about TV contracts and yada, 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 and consistently underwhelmed.
I have a feeling it'll be a lot of the same talking points we're hearing already.
Yep. So going in more into this State of the League address, one of the things that was sort of the controversial point coming out of it was Don Garber basically, he didn't apologize for it. He is almost just sort of a passing admission, almost as if, oh, well, it's excusable because, you know, we're a young league. But what he said was, is that, yeah, we're, here's the quote, as an emerging league, there are times when we are figuring out the rules, and as we go along, we have to have the ability to be flexible and evolve. So basically making it up as they go along. And, you know, we've seen it with some of the rules, and most recently, I think the Clint Dempsey transfer, how he ended up in Seattle, kind of scratched some heads, and why it went one way and not the other, how they, you know, why they chose a certain path to re-entry into the MLS spectrum as opposed to another. You know, Robert, what are your thoughts on the transparency thing, and what do you think MLS needs to do, maybe?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Clear this up.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of, you know, there was an episode of The Simpsons years ago where Homer accidentally joins the military and he starts some international incidences, and the entire episode, whenever he gets blamed for something, he just says, well, it's my first day, and everybody kind of laughs it off. You know, it's one of these things where, you know, you see Don Garber and he goes, well, you know, we're just trying to find our way and blah, blah, blah. And he wraps himself in the American flag and says, we're just doing it for the best in the interest of the league and blah, blah, blah. You know, it frustrates me as a fan because, you know, the whole point of the sports league is – the reason why we watch sports is because we know there's a set of rules, and we know that when you violate these rules, you're punished. And when you follow the rules and you excel beyond the other team or the other player or whatever, you win, they lose, et cetera, et cetera. To sit there and just say, well, you know, we're just trying to make this work. It's baloney. You're 19 years into this thing. You've got 20 franchises almost. You're sitting there getting $100 million from Sheikh Mansour. Give me a break. Get your act together. You know, it's not fair that these other fans, you know, tell this stuff to Chivas fans and Toronto fans and, you know, fans of other franchises who aren't benefiting from this. You know, tell this to the Canadian soccer fans who, oh, by the way, none of this money is going to Canadian players, even though, you know, that's part of your MLS market. You know, this league really needs to sit there and clean out its salary cap house and figure out how the heck they should be paying these players. I just get frustrated to no end with the fact that everything – this stuff happens behind closed doors, and all they do is, again, wrap themselves in the American flag and say, we're doing this for the best benefit of the national team and the league. And we're exposed to swallow that and say, yeah, God bless America. No, that's not the way sports leagues should work. And it just – you know, I won't go any further on this. Just it frustrates me that the league can sit there and say, oh, well, we're trying. That's not good enough. 19 years in, you need to get your act together and actually figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't exactly a you know, this isn't like a soap opera. This isn't a TV show. This isn't anything where, you know, that's basically paid entertainment. I mean, this is supposed to be a sports league, and, you know, plenty of people have misgivings about all of the teams having this connection that they have and how things seem to funnel to one team. Granted, Seattle fans, you know, it's like, yeah, you guys come out 45,000, that's about that as an average draw at CenturyLink Field. You know, you guys have every right to be able to say, yes, you know, a Clint Dempsey belongs on the Sounders probably, you know, based on the support that the team gets. But, you know, I think the question would be, why can't that happen on normal terms? Why does this have to be some sort of cloak and dagger thing where you have all of these strange rules that say, oh, a player is supposed to go through a waiver draft unless they're this or unless they're that? It's just a little too complicated, you know, and you've come down to that because all the teams are coming together to try to keep costs down. And I don't know. It's frustrating because you see the level of play in MLS. It's getting better little by little, but you know it could get a lot better if the purse strings were kind of loosened up a little bit. And I think, I don't know about you, but I think that they could be pretty easily. And, you know, there's, you know, everybody's a little upset and worried that, oh, well, this league's going to fold. You know, I don't know if it's, that precarious, then why hasn't it? And, you know, there's, you know, everybody's a little upset and worried that, oh, well, this league's going to fold. You know, I don't know if it's that precarious, then why hasn't it folded yet? You know, it's just more, you know, talking points and, yeah, I don't know. There's no real resolution to this, and it's not going to be fixed. You know, it's tough to really spend a lot of time talking about it because of the way that it's going to carry out. You know, it's going to carry out the way that the owners and U.S. soccer want it to, which is a static first division, you know, teams buying in, guaranteed to always play there, and, you know, MLS is fine, is perfectly okay to limit salaries and, to a certain extent, direct the traffic when it comes to the high-profile players.
It's laziness. It's a lazy monopoly is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are some strange things that happened this season. You know, I mean, probably the strangest of all was the trade that sent Mike McGee to Chicago for Robbie Rogers. How did that all happen? I mean, that's, you know, what did I see? This is the third year in a row that the MVP has been traded. Is that correct? You know,
not
Di Rosario,
sure. Yeah.
Was traded
twice
was
within
year?
A year. But he won the MVP after being traded.
Right, and Mike McGee won it after being traded.
Sure.
I'm trying to remember who was the MVP last year.
Well, that's telling in and of itself.
Yeah, I'll have to look that up. But
well, Di Rosario, I believe, was MVP last year. No, I'm sorry, he was hurt last year. That's sad that we don't even remember this.
Yeah, well, we've got to get our act
Chris
together.
Chris Wondolowski. It was Wondolowski.
Was traded. Okay, maybe it was two out of the last 3 years then that, you know, a trade happened within, you know, or a guy was traded, you know, the MVP was traded within a calendar year of picking up the award. Because in the year that he won, he was traded from New York to D.C., right?
I'm pretty well, sure. Actually, twice. He was traded from Toronto to New York.
Right.
And then New York to D.C.,
yeah, but he did all of. He pretty much got all of his goals with DC.
Yeah, he won it for being in DC. Yes,
but I mean, what does it say about a league when your most valuable player, so to speak, is being traded? I mean, do you see that in other sports much? I mean, it's kind of a suspicious, you know, not suspicious in, oh, this is a problem, but suspicious more like, wow, you know, what does that say about the way players are valued in this league? And, you know, that kind of, you know, I mean, Di Rosario, I guess you would say it was of star material. Mike McGee, I'm not sure you would say that, but it's like, You know, you can have guys that are journeymen and have been with multiple teams all of a sudden just kick it in and be able to make a huge impact within the league. You know, you find it hard to believe. If you think that if a guy was MVP caliber in most leagues, they're not going to be traded too often unless it's some major trade for, like, you know, McGee gets traded to Chicago for their number one best player. Well, that didn't happen. He was traded for a guy that was coming back from a retirement, and who was almost an afterthought in a trade that they did with Columbus earlier in the off season. So it's just bizarre, I guess.
And well, it just speaks to the general. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The legitimacy. It speaks to the legitimacy of the league, I think. You know, when you have, you know, when you can't have your Thierry Henry or your Landon Donovan or Clint Dempsey pick up your MVP. I mean, they should be. Why aren't they able to do that? You know, what's the issue? I mean, I guess, you know, it's been since 09 since Landon Donovan's won an MVP. You know, and I mean, this is the guy that's supposed to be the talisman for the United States, and he can't pick up more than one MVP in his career. I mean, it's just really remarkable. I mean, I guess that's what I'd leave it as. I don't know what you think about it, but
yeah. Well, I mean, it just speaks to a wider issue about player management and how, you know, the players are treated, and this league's a little bit of a mess in that area. So, I think you know, the commissioner basically said during the broadcast of the MLS Cup that they were going to tie themselves to the U.S. national team. They considered themselves a development league for the national team, and they would never do away with, you know, limits on foreign players and things like that. So, you know, this team or this league, it has this identity of trying to be a feeder system for the U.S. men's national team, and I don't think that's the right model for it, because you're, again, highlighting a couple of players and everybody else is getting thrown to the wolves in various ways. And, you know, their management leaves a lot to be desired. So,
mm-hmm. Let's just go over. I have a couple awards here, and then we'll take a break. Let's just real quick go through the best 11. Might as well mention those players who were able to make it. Donovan Ricketts was the goalkeeper of on the best 11 team, so I assume he's going to be the goalkeeper of the year. But that might be a bad assumption. I don't know. Three defenders are Jose Gonsalves, Matt Beisler, and Omar Gonzalez. I don't think any of those are a real shocker.
Nope.
When it comes to that. I think the only thing that may be a little striking is I think there are some players that you might think should make it as outside backs that never get considered because, you know, the league likes to have multiple midfielders and forwards, and so it's tough to have a three-man defense and select a guy like, you know, Chris Clute or whatever, who I think a lot of people are high on after this season. But midfielders, Tim Cahill, Will Johnson, Diego Valeri, Graham Soucy. I don't know as I can argue with any of those. And the forwards, Marco Devaio, Robbie Keane, Mike McGee. And I think the only remarkable thing out of that is that your leading scorer did not make the best 11, Camillo. So,
yell loud, Vancouver fans.
Yeah, I think they have. Coach of the Year was won by Caleb Porter, although on Wikipedia that has not been updated.
Quick, do it quickly, fans.
Do it quickly. I should get in there and do it myself, but I'm too busy co-hosting a podcast. Comeback Player of the Year was Kevin Alston. And Mike McGee, as we said, won the MVP. So not sure that there's any others that I missed out of there. The Defender of the Year, I don't know if that's been awarded yet. We'll look it up during this next break. And if we missed any, we'll let you know. When we get back, we're going to talk about the United States men's national team and what's going to happen for them come June of 2014. You're listening to the United States of Football Show. The third and final segment for this United States of Football show, recording on December 8th. It's a Sunday night, and we did miss a couple of awards. How crappy of us, Robert.
Yeah, we're terrible people. Sorry, folks. You're not getting your money's worth on this one.
So your AT&T Rookie of the Year was Dylan Powers. Congratulations to that Colorado Rapids player. I believe Deshaun Brown was another one who was on the list. But it's kind of speaks to the youthful nature of that team, and they might be here to stay for a while as far as they made the playoffs this year. MLS Defender of the Year was Jose Gonsalves from the New England Revolution. I think most people thought he was going to get that, but there was a couple who wanted to see Beisler just because he's Beisler. We talked about the Goalkeeper of the Year. Yes, indeed, Donovan Ricketts got that. Newcomer of the Year, Diego Valeri. I don't think that was too much of a surprise either. He, took Portland to being in that Supporter Shield, race, for quite a while. Quite a surprise there in, the Rose City. So let's move on. And what is basically our last topic of this episode? Basically, I don't know if it's going to be concluding the 2013 season, so to speak, but it could be. I don't know. We have to talk more about that at a later date, Robert. But the World Cup draw, this was bantered about a lot. I mean, I was at lunch on Friday, and I wasn't able to get to a place. We were in that chain shop that sells Heroes or whatever you want to call them. Submarine sandwiches. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and so they didn't have a TV in there. So I was, updating my Twitter on my phone all the time, trying to see who got what. And why don't you go ahead and go through the groups? And for some, happiness, others, and probably most of you, disappointment.
So we're going to do this in alphabetical order because that's the way my mind works. Let's start with Group A. You have the host nation, Brazil. We'll be facing off against Croatia, Cameroon, and from CONCACAF, Mexico. So an interesting group for Mexico. Besides Brazil, it's a doable group. They could advance from this group, I think, if they get their act together, but they're going to have to beat everybody else but Brazil. So let's see how that goes. Group B, I think, is more the group of death than Group G, but that's just me. Spain, the Netherlands, and Chile. One of those three will be going home. And then Australia will be getting a thank you for participating medal after they get creamed by all three teams. Group C, Colombia, Greece, the Ivory Coast, and Japan. It's an intriguing group right there. Group D sees another CONCACAF team. Costa Rica will face off against Uruguay, England, and Italy. So what's that? Probably 7 or 8 World Cup titles in that group alone. Group E sees Switzerland, Ecuador, and France face off against Honduras for the third CONCACAF team in this World Cup. Group F, Argentina, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iran, and Nigeria. Group G is the one probably most people are familiar with. Germany, Portugal, Ghana, and the United States. And then Group H, you have Belgium and really some disappointing other teams. Algeria, who we all remember from 2010, Russia, and the Korea Republic. So, Earl, you want to start with Group G and figure out how the U.S. can get out of this group into the next round? All right, let's move on.
So let's get right to it. I was rather sick of following it on Twitter because the vast majority of the opinion is, oh, God, this is the end of the world. Armageddon, doomsday, da-da-da. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
You have to win matches to get out of your group. You have to win. I mean, for me, I look at the U.S., and I know that, I know we're supposed to have this sort of defeatist mentality where, oh, well, if we were to get to the quarterfinals, oh, well, that would be doing good. you know, that would be doing well. We're, you know, that's a success for us. You know, I think as a superpower of a nation, I really think we ought to be striving for more than that. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that I think absolutely that a loss at all in the World Cup, you know, like a, like, I'm not saying that I think we should absolutely win the World Cup every year. You know, I don't necessarily think that, but I think your goal needs to be to win. And so if you're going to win a World Cup, you have to face these teams anyway. So, okay, you got Ghana. Yes, we have a poor track record against Ghana. Well, right the ship against them. So if you can get a win there, which is that's who they're starting against, build a little confidence. You know, some of these guys like Tim Howard and Landon Donovan and Clint Dempsey, you know, have experienced some painful losses against Ghana. Well, you right that ship. Okay, well, then you've got Portugal, who, to me, they're dangerous, but they're dangerous because they have who most consider to be the second or third best player in the world, in Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not going to be sitting here and saying that Portugal is only about Cristiano Ronaldo, but, you know, I think they are a team that is, you know, fallible. I think you can, at the very least, draw with them and maybe beat them. I think Israel did pretty well against them. I think they drew them twice in the qualifying rounds. So, you know, I don't think Portugal by any stretch is some, indestructible team that can't, you know, experience it. So, you know, and because we're facing Ghana first, Portugal gets Germany. If Germany kicks the snot out of them, you know, they may be, you know, the press in Portugal and Lisbon might be eating the heck out of them. And then they come in and lay a flat egg against the U.S. And so if you could get two wins out of those two games, you're through probably, you know, I mean, so, you know, just, I just see it as a situation where you have to win anyway. So just quit whining about it and get about it, you know? And I think from what I've seen on Twitter from some of the players, I think Jeff Cameron was the one that I saw most of all. Yeah. It's not the most ideal draw if you're looking at it from the standpoint of, oh, we must get out, or, you know, getting out is good enough. No, I don't think getting out is good enough. And if you're a team like, you know, until you are a team, let's say like Brazil, I don't think that you can sit there and say, oh, you know, we got hosed, or, you know, we're in the group of death or whatever. You know, a team like the Netherlands getting drawn in with Spain and Chile, that's a pain in the ass. The Netherlands should be through to the round of 16 every time. Right? I mean,
at least
you say
this
that?
Team.
Yeah. I mean, they're a solid team and they get basically screwed over. You know, the team that got, France got the sweetest draw that they could. I mean, they've got basically three lightweights in their group for the most part. Ecuador might be all right, but you know, I guess Switzerland is fine, but you know, I was looking through their roster recently. It's not like they're stacked with big names. I think, you know, Jerdan Shaqiri from Bayern Munich is probably the most recognizable of them. So it's, Indler might be another player that's a good player from their team, but it's like, it's not like, you know, so France, and that was the whole, sorry, I had to cough. That was the whole deal with this group X or pod X or whatever it was. Basically, Platini got France an easier draw because they should have gotten stuck in the same group as, let me take a look at the pots.
Yeah, the group D.
They should have been the one stuck in the group with Africa and South America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lesser teams from those. So then they would have to be up against Europe, another team from Europe, which instead that ended up being Italy. So Italy ends up getting screwed by having to play England. I'll leave it up to you, the listener, as to whether you think that's a tough draw or not. But you know, Italy has to face not only England but Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Costa Rica is a better team than Honduras. So, you know, they finished second in CONCACAF qualifying, if I recall.
Yeah. It's not an easy draw for teams like that. So it's throughout, and I'll just throw in one other thing about that. You know, for the U.S. team, this is actually not a bad situation. I mean, it's bad in terms of who you're going to face, but really the expectations cannot be any lower than it is right now. I mean, if they had gotten drawn into group, you know, let's look at my other CONCACAF teams. Let's say they got drawn into Group E instead of Honduras. So they were playing Ecuador, France, and Switzerland. You know, a tough group, but if they hadn't advanced, you know, there would have been some serious questions raised about this team and the progress they'd made. If they'd drawn into a group with Algeria, yeah, I know this wasn't possible. Algeria, Russia, and Korea, you know, they'd sit there. And they didn't advance, it'd be like, well, what's wrong with the U.S. national team? And there'd be the usual, you know, we have the biggest inferiority complex in the world, which confuses the heck out of me. Our soccer fans do, and there'd be this huge thing of, oh my gosh, what's wrong? Why would you have to tear down this thing and start all over again? If we advance from Group G, it's game on. I mean, it's a surprise, and it's a fun surprise. And all of a sudden, we're a team with momentum that's playing with house money. We don't advance. You just point to the fact we got the worst draw in the world, and we move on. It sucks. Yeah, it's not the end of the world. I mean, we couldn't game the system like France. So I think that's the biggest thing they've got going for them is the fact that they can play fast and loose and say, you know what? We're not supposed to advance. We get a win, two wins. All of a sudden, we've got some momentum. We can do some things here. If they don't, oh well. I mean, it's easy for me to say, but on the other hand, I mean, nobody's expecting them to do anything. And, you know, I think your analysis is spot on. Ghana's the boogeyman team, but they're, you know, they have some flaws in their team. Portugal's a great team with Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, I mean, we're possibly due against Ghana. I mean, look at it that way. I mean, we've kind of gotten screwed the last couple times we played them as far as the outcomes, you know?
Yeah.
And we haven't even talked really about Germany, which I think is one of the flakier teams, in the last few years. Yes, they've won a World Cup in the last few World Cup cycles. But I mean, it's not like, you know, they didn't, you know, it's not like they made the finals of the Euros. I mean, they kind of petered out, I believe it was in the semis. You know, I think they can have some shocker games. Yes, they're a talented team, but, you know, you could theoretically you could end up facing Germany and already be through. You know, if you beat Ghana and you beat Portugal, you could already be through, and the Germany game could mean nothing really. I mean,
I'll disagree with you on that one. I think Germany is probably one of the top two best teams in the world right now, even though they're flaky. I think their talent's pretty incredible. We played a C team for them, and you see the players on that team. I mean, that's pretty – prove me wrong, kids, but that's a pretty insurmountable task.
Okay, but I'll take it from one other perspective. You know, I look at it as if you're Jurgen Klinsmann, you have to look at that Ghana game as why you were hired.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the one where – you've got to go out and prove that the U.S. can come out and beat a team they should beat on the big stage. Yeah, if you draw Portugal and lose to Germany and you know, flame out, so be it. You've got to beat Ghana because, you know, they're a team that when we, you know, pass through into the knockout stages in 2010, you know, we should have beaten them. We couldn't. And so that's like if they lose that one, you know, I think that spells some major problems for the U.S. But, you know, I guess the other talking point coming out of this was Mexico getting what appears to be, you know, a rubber stamp on their way through. You know, it looks like, you know, Croatia and Cameroon, if they can find their way back into form, that those should both be winnable matches for them. So that's the big question. Can they get back to form? If they play like they did in the calendar year 2013, you know, it's a crapshoot. You know, they may, you know, you might see Croatia be able to sneak through. But, you know, if they're able to round it back and start to look more like the team that won the Gold Cup in 2011, I think they have a very good chance of getting to the knockouts. And who knows what they do from there. But, it kind of makes the U.S.'s what they did against Panama look even more silly. You know, how they defeated Panama and, you know, really put forward the effort to do it. You know, and you know, I hope plenty of you out there wear the Mexico-U.S. combined jersey or whatever, and what was the Zeusy thing or whatever that, you know, it's, to me, it's almost, I mean, it's not shameful to keep playing, but I don't know.
You people should stop listening to our podcast.
Yeah, I mean, we gave Mexico a get out of jail free card. So, you know, if the knockouts come and Mexico's still playing and we're out, there's going to be a lot of gnashing of teeth. So, I don't want to be privy to that. So, U.S., you'd better take care of your business and maybe even do a little more than that in Group G. So, not exactly what we were hoping for coming out of the qualifying, but, you know, it's the World Cup. What are you going to expect? It's the best teams in the world, and you're going to have to beat a couple of the best teams in the world to get through. So,
true.
I mean, how do you feel about my statement about the, you know, where we should stand as far as our development as a, you know, World Cup power, let's say? You know, should we be expecting to do more than just make the knockout stages? I mean, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, it is interesting.
Because I kind of monopolized that conversation.
No, it's fine. Yes and no. I mean, I think that if you take it just from a geopolitical standpoint, absolutely we should be. I mean, you look at this group from a geopolitical standpoint, you have Germany and the U.S., which are two of the strongest economies and nations in the world and many, many different reasons. And, you know, you have Ghana, which struggling, obviously, economically, and Portugal. I won't even get into that, you know. The U.S. has the resources where they should be a competitor for the World Cup. Now, we do know that soccer history plays a role in this, and the U.S. soccer history isn't in grand. I agree with you. I do think that we should be better. We should have higher expectations of this team. So I won't disagree too much with what you said. I'll just throw in one other thought on this draw. If the U.S. advances from this group, it's not the worst thing in the world from here on out, because if they finish second in this group, they face the winner of Group H, which will actually be terrible because that'll probably be Belgium. But if they somehow win this group, they would face the second team in Group H, which would be, as we said, Algeria, Russia, or Korea. So not too, too bad there. And then you can just keep drawing maps from there. So,
yeah, I mean, and part of the issue is like my – you know, my opinion about this could sound somewhat novice or naive, but, you know, I don't know. I've looked at this enough. I think we as Americans do a good job of either underestimating or over, you know, spend too much time looking for the moral victories and, oh, well, yeah, we aren't going to win the World Cup, but yeah, we made those knockout stages. We won a game there in the group stage. You know, we beat Ghana. Oh, that was good. And we drew against both Portugal and Germany, and that got us through. Yeah, that was cool, man. I don't know. I think the time for moral victories is over. I think that ship sails when you blow it against Ghana in, you know, a knockout stage. And, you know, it seems like traditionally we've had trouble being able to develop the things that seem to be most important when it comes to being a soccer power, which is, you know, either solid defenders or, you know, super talented scorers. And it's like, as soon as we seem to get one of those, they end up flaking out. Like, Jose Altidore has seemed to do, or, you know, Clint Dempsey's kind of fallen apart here in the last 6 months to a year. Maybe we could probably go 18 months, because ever since his move to Tottenham, it's pretty much, you know, he's went in the crapper. And, you know, it's just those types of things where, you know, we need to expect more. And sometimes you wonder if we don't expect enough out of this, you know? And I know it's a crowded sports landscape, and you have probably twice as many players identifying with the NFL or with the NBA, you know, other sports that are more lucrative and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we've got to get it right one of these days. You know, we've got to fix this problem. And, you know, we could spend a whole podcast talking about, gee, how do we eclipse these problems? But, excuse me. Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it could sound naive, but, you know, I'm sick of the typical talking points. You know, I use Twitter probably too much. I get to read all of the opinions of the major soccer writers in this country, and I just think it's time to move beyond that. Let's stop apologizing for, you know, the fact that we're, you know, it seems like soccer is a second-tier sport in America. It is, but, you know, I think if we can overcome that, it has a chance to really, you know, if you could get yourself to a World Cup final even, you know, I mean, it's clear this country turns out to watch these events. So, I don't know.
Agreed.
I guess I'm just rambling on.
No, I agree with you. We need to stop being the whiniest soccer fans in the world and just wake up, revise our expectations, and, you know, actually pretend like we're a world power in sport, which we are.
Send your thoughts. You can reach us on Twitter. You can reach us. Actually, US of Football, USOFFUTBOL would be the place to find us on Twitter. We also have email. That's the same thing, USOFFootball@gmail.com. So, Robert, thanks for coming on tonight. It's been great covering the game this season with you, and look forward to next season. Whether we do another podcast this month or not, I'm not sure, but it's been great. Look forward to the future.
Absolutely. Do look forward to that.
You have been listening to the United States Football Show. For Robert Hay, I'm Earl Reed. We hope you take all 3 points.